Well, hello. It's good to be here this evening. We're going through this book of Ecclesiastes in the evening service. It's one of my favorite books of the Bible. It was written by King Solomon, who's one of the most intriguing characters of the Old Testament. Absolutely incredible story behind him. But one thing he makes clear in the book of Ecclesiastes is that a lot of what the world has to offer, a lot of the things that we are attracted to in this world, is in fact meaningless. I'm looking at chapter 5 this evening, which is on page 639 of the Pew Bible. And the section that I'm looking on is possessions are meaningless, or riches are meaningless, from verse 10. And as you go back through what we've looked at so far, we know that riches are meaningless, but Solomon has also spoken on advancement is meaningless. And if you go back one more page, toil is meaningless, wisdom and folly are meaningless, pleasures are meaningless, everything is meaningless. So a lot of what we aspire for, a lot of what this world has to offer, a lot of things that we hope for, wish to have, is in fact, according to the wisest man ever to have lived, meaningless. He has a really interesting story. When he was first starting out as king, God appeared to him and had this conversation with Solomon and asked him, if there's anything that you want, what could it be? If you could have anything in this world, what would it be? And I think a lot of us would love to have that one-on-one conversation with God where he asks us that question, like, if you could have anything, what would you have? What would you want? And I think most of us would think maybe some more money, a larger house, a better job, more success, private jet, island in the Caribbean, maybe. But you can have all to yourself. But Solomon, his answer is quite profound. Rather than asking for money or power or honor, he has his one response is wisdom. And the reason for it is so that he can wisely guide his people as the new king of Israel. And God is so moved by that request for wisdom, so moved by it, that he makes Solomon the wisest man ever to live. But then goes on and gives him power and honor and riches and land. And it says that he was the richest king ever to live and would also be the richest king ever to live. So Solomon was absolutely incredibly rich and amazingly intelligent and wise as well. In 2 Chronicles 9, it describes his wealth. He had multiple streams of income, which is absolutely incredible. In 2 Chronicles 9:13, it says, the weight of gold that Solomon received yearly was 666 talents, which is, I looked it up, and it's about 750 million pounds worth of gold. That was his annual salary. That was like his base rate before anything else. That was what he was going home with every single year. So he was also a king. He was also the son of a king. So he would have inherited everything that his father, David, had left to him. So that would have been one source of income. Then he had this salary of 666 talents of gold every single year. He also had this fleet of boats. In verse 21, it says the king had a fleet of trading ships. Once every 3 years it returned, carrying gold, silver, ivory, apes, and baboons. It goes on to say that King Solomon was greater in riches and wisdom than all other kings of the earth. All the kings of the earth saw audience with Solomon to hear the wisdom God had put in his heart. Year after year, everyone who came brought a gift, articles of silver and gold and robes, weapons and spices, horses and mules. So not only did he have this inheritance from his father, not only did he have this absolutely incredible yearly salary, and not only did he have this fleet of ships that were going out and trading and coming back with ivory and gold and silver and precious stones and wild animals, people were coming far and wide just to listen to King Solomon talk. I have an evening with King Solomon just to sit back and listen to the wisdom that came from him. So this is why he was incredibly rich, but this is what he did with his money. It says in verse 17, this is absolutely hilarious. Then the king made a great throne inlaid with ivory and overlaid with pure gold. Feel sorry for these elephants, but still, he made this amazing throne. And then the throne had six steps and a footstool of gold was attached to it, so he could just kick back and put his feet up on a footstool of gold like we all do every evening. And on both sides of the seat were armrests, with a lion standing beside each of them. Now, I don't know if it's a real lion or a statue, but either way, that's pretty impressive that he has like this amazing setup in his throne room. Then it goes on to say, 12 lions stood on each of the 6 steps, one at each end of each step. Nothing like it had ever been made for any other kingdom. All King Solomon's goblets were gold, and all of the household articles in the palace of the forest of Lebanon were pure gold. Nothing was made of silver, because silver was considered of little value in Solomon's day. This guy was so wealthy. Ships, he had armies, he had gold, silver, precious stones, wild animals, palaces, anything and everything that you could imagine King Solomon had. After a hard day's work, he could go back and rest in his palace and maybe play with his wild baboons, sit on his throne with his lions by his side. That was the life that he was living. He was incredibly wealthy, but he was also incredibly wise. And in Ecclesiastes 5, which is what we're looking at this evening, he distills in these few verses everything that he has learned about being so wealthy and so rich. In modern day terms, he'd be like a multi-billionaire. Think like Sultan of Brunei plus Donald Trump plus Bill Gates plus Mark Zuckerberg. There was no one else like this kind of wealth. And he distills and condenses everything that he's learned about wealth in these few verses. This is Ecclesiastes 5, verses 10 to 20. So on page 639, if you just want to follow. Just starting at verse 10. Those who love money never have enough. Those who love wealth are never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owners except to feast their eyes on them? The sleep of laborers is sweet. The sleep of laborers is sweet, whether they eat little or much, but the abundance of rich permits no sleep. I have seen a grievous evil under the sun. Wealth hoarded up to the harm of its owners, or wealth lost through some misfortune, so that when they have children, there is nothing left for them to inherit. Everyone comes naked from their mother's womb, and as everyone comes, so they depart. They take nothing from their toil that they can carry in their hands. This, too, is a grievous evil. As everyone comes, so they depart. And what do they gain, since they toil for the wind? All their days they eat in darkness with great frustration, affliction, and anger. This is what I have observed to be good, that it is appropriate for people to eat, to drink, and find satisfaction in their toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life that God has given them, for this is their lot. Moreover, when God gives people wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is a gift of God. They seldom reflect on the days of their lives because God keeps them occupied with gladness of heart. So that is what the wisest man and the richest man ever to live has to say about riches, possessions, and money. And he has a few things that he speaks about. The first thing that he talks about, the first truth about money that he gets across is that riches don't satisfy. Verse 10, those who love money never have enough. Other translations say that those who love silver never have enough. And in Solomon's day, it says that there was more gold and more silver than there was stones on the ground. That's how much wealth and how much gold there was at the time of King Solomon. So he's saying here that riches don't satisfy. I was reading recently about this lady in the U.S. who had won the U.S. lottery. And she'd won $112 million in the lottery. And she went and bought a new house. She bought a new car. A new wardrobe, new clothes to put in her wardrobe. She's got a private personal trainer so she can work on her fitness. Went to Paris. And then the very next week, she went to the shops and made another purchase. She purchased another lottery ticket. After winning the lottery, after winning $112,000, she decided to buy another lottery ticket. Not because she'd spent it all, but because $112 million wasn't enough. And that's the statistics are against her there, because if you've won the lottery once, that's already quite remote, and the chances of winning the lottery twice are probably not even heard of. But that's what she did. Riches don't satisfy. I was reading about the Duke of Westminster recently. He was Britain's richest man. He owned loads of land across the country, owned most of London. He owned more of London than any individual person, including the royal family, including the Queen. He owns like most of Mayfair. He had a £9 billion estate. So he had £9 billion worth of stuff. And he said in an interview that if he could, he would sell it all and live in the Bahamas. Because he knew from experience that money didn't satisfy. The riches don't satisfy. And in our own experience, there's this, I guess, this popular idea of retail therapy, that we're only one transaction away from happiness, that we're only one purchase away from being content and satisfied. We often see on the media, for example, that if we buy better dog food or cat food, we'll finally be happy. If we get better car insurance, we'll be happy. It's not true. Solomon says that riches don't satisfy, possessions don't satisfy. He then goes on to say that riches are expensive in verse 11. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. So in other words, the more you have, the more you have to lose. The more you have, the more expensive it is to maintain. For example, if you had a yacht, you'd have to pay for a crew, you'd have to pay for the cost of having it in a harbor, you'd have to pay for the cost of removing the barnacles. It'd be expensive to maintain a yacht. If you had a country home, for example, like an estate or a mansion, you'd have to pay for security, contents insurance, having a gardener. If you had millions of pounds, you would need like a fund manager or a stockbroker to maintain that, an accountant. The more you have, the more expensive it is to maintain. Coco Chanel, the fashion designer, once said famously that, what did she say? She said that the best things in life are free, but the second best things in life are very, very expensive. And she was referring to like designer handbags and designer clothes and expensive jewelry. But the good thing in the way that the way that God made the world is that you don't have to own it to enjoy it. If you look at Adam and Eve, for example, they didn't own the Garden of Eden, but they were able to enjoy it. I don't own Bulls Park. I don't own a 17th century mansion. I don't own acres of land, but on my weekends, I can go over there and I can walk around and I can see the wild animals and see and enjoy the small lake they have there. You don't have to own it to enjoy it. God has given us so much that we can enjoy without necessarily having to buy it. So Solomon so far has told us that riches don't satisfy us, riches are expensive. He then goes on to say that riches are tiring. In verse 12, the sleep of laborers is sweet, whether they eat little or much. But the abundance of the rich permits them no sleep. If, for example, again, if you were to win the lottery now, you probably wouldn't last the whole service. You may run home. You may then begin to think, what could you do with the money? Maybe you'd plan trips, maybe you'd go online and look at houses you could buy or cars you could buy. And your mind will start racing the possibilities and the potential that you would now have. Money can be tiring, because the more you have, the more you have to think about, the more that you have to worry about. For example, I don't worry about getting scratch marks on my Rolls Royce because I don't have one. I don't have to worry about the leather seats in my private jet getting damaged and drinks being poured on them, because I don't have them. The less you have, the less you have to worry about. I did, however, recently get an iPhone, and the problems with a new phone is that you have to treasure it and look after it, and then eventually you drop it. And then you get a scratch on there, and then you don't worry so much about it. I haven't yet got a scratch on there, but give it time, it'll probably happen. So riches can be tiring, because the more you have, the more you have to think about, the more you have to worry about. Solomon then goes on to say that riches can be harmful. In verse 13, I have seen a grievous evil under the sun, wealth hoarded to the harm of its owners, or wealth lost through some misfortune. I don't know if you guys watch reality television, but there's a famous American lady called Kim Kardashian.
Does anyone here know her? I'm sure you've all heard of her. She was early this month in Paris on holiday. And she was staying in an expensive apartment on a penthouse suite on the top floor. And that evening, five men dressed as security guards ran upstairs, ran into her room, tied her up, gagged her, threw her in a bathtub, and then stole $20 million worth of jewelry. And what's interesting about that story is, I don't know who takes $20 million worth of jewelry with them on holiday. But apparently she does. And the French police actually blamed her for this, saying that she shouldn't have been flaunting it online, she shouldn't have been flaunting it when she was out publicly. But it goes to show that the more you have, the more you have to lose, and that riches can be harmful. One of the most richest men in America, Warren Buffett, made his money from investing on the stock market. And he said that when he passes away, he's going to leave his children and grandchildren, obviously, some money. But he wanted to leave them enough so they could do anything, but not enough so they could do nothing. So just the right amount of money so that they still had to work, they still had to have jobs, because he knew that that would give his children and grandchildren a purpose, but not enough so they could just kick back and do nothing at all. Because if you don't work, if you just sit back and not do anything, it can be detrimental. And so Solomon says here, riches can be harmful. It can cause misfortune. And then he goes on to say, riches are fleeting. In verse 15, everyone comes naked from their mother's womb, and as everyone comes, so they depart. They take nothing from their toil that they can carry in their hands. So riches are fleeting. They don't necessarily last. The ancient Egyptians had this practice of burying their pharaohs and rich people with all their possessions. So they would build these massive pyramids, and they were taking in all of their gold, all of their silver, all of their precious items they had, and they would be buried with them, because they thought they could take it to the afterlife. They had no idea it would end up in the British Museum. Unfortunate for them. But you can't take it with you. The things that we earn in this world, the possessions that we accumulate, they stay here when we depart. And not just in the life or death sense, the eternal sense, but also like in the everyday sense. Riches can be fleeting, because whenever you buy a new car, since you drive off the parking lot, it's lost a lot of its value. When you get paid at the beginning of the month, it's that same amount of money is not necessarily there at the end of the month. Money comes and money goes. And Solomon says here, riches are fleeting. It doesn't last. No matter how much money you have, no matter what you make, you can't take it with you. So Donald Trump's made millions and billions. He's got his towers. He's not taking them with him when he goes. The Queen has palaces and jewels, which she can enjoy for now, but she won't be able to take it with her when she goes. Everyone's born poor, and everyone leaves the world with nothing. But then Solomon finally comes down and condenses everything that he's had to say so far into these last few verses, which I think are absolutely amazing. From verse 18, he says, "This is what I have observed to be good, that is appropriate for people to eat, to drink, and to find satisfaction in their toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given them, for this is their lot. Moreover, when God gives people wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is a gift of God. They seldom reflect on the days of their lives, because God keeps them occupied with gladness of heart." I love those last few verses. When God gives people wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is a gift of God. So God gives us wealth and possessions, but are we enjoying them? Do we have this ability to enjoy them? And can we accept our lot and be happy in our toil? So it's saying here that being able to accept our lot, the fact that we're not here forever, we're here one day, gone the next. Life is short, life is just a vapor. We have to accept our lot, but be happy in our toil, because life can be painful, life can be frustrating, it can be hard, it can be difficult, and it can be toilsome. But what God is saying here, that we have to accept our lot and be happy in our toil. And as a result, we will seldom reflect on the days of our lives, and God will keep us busy and our hearts glad with gladness of heart. What I like about this passage is it reveals that God uses possessions to teach us something about him. Because everything that he does, he has a purpose in, and he uses riches and he uses money that we earn and he uses our possessions to teach us and reveal something about himself. So for example, the first point, riches don't satisfy. Riches don't satisfy, but Christ does satisfy. He does satisfy us. God, we can go to God for satisfaction. When Christ spoke to the woman at the well and told her about the water, that if you drink my living water, you will never thirst again. Christ does satisfy us in ways that riches and possessions never will. And riches are expensive, but you know, but the gifts that God has for us are free and everlasting. Riches can be tiring, but Christ isn't. We can go to him and get rest. He says that his burden is light and his yoke is easy. Riches can be harmful, but we know that God has plans not to harm us, but to prosper us. And riches can be fleeting. And we know that God isn't fleeting, that he is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So God uses possessions to reveal something about himself, to reveal something about our character and our relationship with him. It's how he works. I'm reminded of the story of when the Israelites were in the Promised Land. And they were hungry, and God gave them manna, which is this wafer-like, honey-flavored substance that every morning they would wake up to. And they would go out, and they would gather it, and they would boil it, and bake it, and cook with it, and eat it. And he would provide for them each day. And he commanded them, only gather what you need for today. You can forget about tomorrow. Just gather what you need for today. And then tomorrow you can do the same. But a few people decided just to gather a bit more than they needed and store some for the next day, just in case. And it says that what happened was the manna began to become infested with maggots and it began to smell. And I think what God was saying there is, just like possessions, and just, we're supposed to see possessions like we see manna, that God will provide for us on a day-to-day basis. That we're not to necessarily look to it for our security, while we're supposed to go to God day-to-day for our security. When Jesus taught us how to pray, he didn't say, give us today our weekly bread or monthly bread or just give me a lifetime supply of bread. He said daily bread. We're supposed to go to him each day to rely on him. And to gather, like they were gathering the manna, go to him each day and gather what he has for us. Rely on him for our sustenance daily. When I spoke last time, I shared a story about this lady that I used to work for. I work in one of the largest law firms in the world in London. And we pride ourselves in being like the most innovative law firm and being the most technologically advanced law firm. And yeah, it's a really interesting place to work. I really enjoy working there. And we do, most of what we do is banking and finance related. Most of our clients are big banks. And we pride ourselves on being like unlike anyone else in that we have the latest technology, the latest gadgets, the latest gizmos to do what we do. And we often have these meetings where people can come together, and if they have an idea about how we can improve productivity or save money or save time, people can pitch their new ideas and then the good ones get developed and implemented. So we pride ourselves on technology and being really advanced. And when I spoke last time, I mentioned this lady that I worked for, and she was really high up in the business. So I didn't get to speak to her too often, but when I spoke last time, I spoke on integrity and I mentioned a conversation that I had with her. But a few weeks after I spoke here last, she passed away. And it was quite unexpected and quite sad. And then a few weeks after she passed away, we had her funeral. And it was the first time that I'd ever been to a funeral with people that I'd worked with fellow colleagues. And it's the first time I've been to church during like a work. It was the first time I'd ever been paid to go to church, because it was during the week, during working hours, and I was there with all my colleagues. We went to this really old building. It was built in the 12th century. This really old church in the city of London. And we walked in there and we had this really nice service. We sang hymns with this massive organ in the background. people came forward and shared stories about this lady and how nice she was and how good she was at her job and how hardworking she was. And then afterwards, after the service, I headed back to the office. And what really hit me was the contrast between the two. Because where I work, we have really expensive lawyers who earn millions of pounds a year. I remember I used to work for someone who earned about 2.1 million pounds a year. I can't even comprehend how that looks in your bank account. But so we pride ourselves on having the best and the most expensive lawyers and having the best technology and having an amazing building. We have an amazing glass building in the City of London. So when it comes to making money and doing business, we have the best lawyers, we have the best technology and the best building. But when it comes to dealing with life and death, we didn't use a highly paid lawyer to do the service. They used a priest, and we didn't use a fancy glass building. We went to this really old, like 800, 900-year stone building in the center of London. And we didn't use the latest gadgets. We used an organ, and we used the pulpit. And there's such a contrast between the two, because when it comes to dealing with business and making money, we rely on gadgets, we rely on glass buildings and fancy technology. But when it comes to things that are eternal, when it comes to life and death, possessions only serve us so much, they only take us so far. But when it comes to things of eternity and things of eternal significance, that's when we can no longer rely on riches and wealth and possessions. We have to look beyond that. And in that instance, we look to something more ancient, more mysterious. We look to the church as a way of dealing with this person who we worked with and liked but had now passed away. And I'm reminded of the story when Jesus spoke to a multitude of people, and it says that they found his teaching hard to understand. And as a result, they slowly walked away and drifted off until there was only a few people left. And it says that Jesus turned to his 12 disciples and said, "You don't want to leave two, do you?" And then Peter stood up and said, "To whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life." And when it comes to possessions and riches, what King Solomon's saying here is they only take you so far. They don't satisfy you eternally. They can be harmful. The pursuit of possessions and riches can be tiresome. But what really lasts is God. That's who we put our faith in. That's the person who loves us. That's the person who, when it comes ultimately to life and death and eternity, he's the only one we can fully rely on. So as we go into this week, I'd really recommend you just look at this this passage in Ecclesiastes about riches and what Solomon has to say, because there's so much depth in there. And I've spent the last few weeks just reading it and rereading it, and there's so much in there to take away. So I'd really recommend that you spend some time looking at Ecclesiastes. We're going to sing shortly our final song, Amazing Grace, but let's just pray quickly. Heavenly Father, I thank you so much for your word. I thank you so much for this book of Ecclesiastes that we've been looking at in the evening service. I thank you so much for this challenge as well, that rather than putting our faith in possessions and riches, things that we can see, you call us to put our faith into the one that we can't see, you, Heavenly Father. And I pray as we go into this week that we'll be reminded of this. We'll be reminded that money and wealth only takes us so far. But you, Lord, you last. You are everlasting.